What's going on, everyone? It's Kyle Cruz, and welcome back to The Road to Reckoning, the Mission Impossible journey. On this podcast, we're going to be talking about Mission Impossible 3 and Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. But before we get into that, I've got a fresh new review for you guys. Last night, I went to an early screening of Joyride, the new studio comedy directed by Adele Lim, produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg of Point Grey Productions, and starring Ashley Park, Sherry Cola, Stephanie Hsu from Everything Ever All at Once, and Sabrina Wu. This played at the South by Southwest Film Festival way back in March. It got some good reactions coming out of it. People were pretty excited about it, saying that studio comedies are coming back. We have got more of a resurgence lately, especially with No Hard Feelings, that movie with Jennifer Lawrence. And this is the next studio comedy that is coming out this year. And I'm just going to start off by saying it probably is at the moment my favorite studio comedy that came out this year, because I found this movie to be really, really funny and a good return to form for this type of studio comedy. It's about four Asian American friends that travel through Asia in search of one of their birth mothers. And along the way, they get into some shenanigans. So it's a classic debaucherous, sex, raunchy comedy. And I feel like we haven't got one of those. And I know we just got No Hard Feelings a couple weeks ago, but I feel like we haven't got one of those in like a pretty long time, because most of the market seems to be saturated by these kind of dramedies or these dramas that turn into comedies. Because I think what studios are looking at the moment, what they're thinking has been in the past, like let's say 5 or 10 years or so, has been that there's really no genre now. There's a lot of like hybrid genre going on, especially with horror and comedy. We don't really get a lot of like just straightforward comedy movies unless we turn to our international films. And yeah, we don't really get them here in Australia or, you know, in America or anywhere else. And I feel it's kind of died out over those years, because that's really what's been happening. We're going through a little more of like a hybrid genre phase. Like, there really is no genre now, because a lot of films encompass a lot of different genres now, which I think is a good thing. But I also think every now and then, I think you just need a nice straightforward comedy. You need to laugh, and you're there to hang out with these characters and get it with their antics. And I just love when it's just a crazy, raucous, good time. And that's what Joyride is. It's really not going to be for everyone if this is not your type of humor. And really, sometimes this is not my type of humor. I tend to go a bit more like dark comedy, like, you know, something like Beau Is Afraid, for example, which, you know, people would say not that funny. But I found it hilarious, and I still think it's the funniest movie of the year. But yeah, this type of humor doesn't tend to be my type of humor, but I'm willing to give it a chance, especially if there's some good talent behind it, if the cast has good chemistry, and, you know, if it's a generally fun time, and that's what it is. I got to talk about the cast, because they are the best part of this movie. Their friendship that they form. Ashley Park's character, Audrey, has a best friend that she's grown up with called Lolo, that's played by Sherry Cola, and then they go to Beijing to try to close this business deal, because Audrey's grown up to be an author and Lolo's grown up to be really kind of like, you know, she calls herself a starving artist throughout the movie, but that can be looked at from people to be doing nothing and kind of being a bit of a, you know, loser, which is not true. And then they go meet her friend, Kat, played by Stephanie Hsu from Everything Ever All at Once. That was the last time we saw her. And she's like a famous actress and, you know, very, very famous, has a husband, you know, got it all, really, got it all. And what ends up happening is that Audrey doesn't know where her birth mother came from. So Lolo kind of sets up a journey, little adventure, where they go to find out Audrey's birth mother, as well as close this deal that she's doing in Beijing. And you've got yourself a classic road trip, debaucherous kind of sex comedy. And I mean, I don't want to say sex comedy, because it's not just about sex. It's really about friendship, really. It's about the friendship between these four women. And just like how close they are, how close they get to be what they mean to each other. And yeah, I was actually really surprised by the, because it was off to a rocky start. I think it was a bit too, in terms of its editing and pacing, I thought it was a bit too quick. And I thought it got up to a bit of a rocky start. But after about 20, 25 minutes, I was like, all right, okay, I'm settling in here. And then, and there were some really, really funny bits, particularly the K-pop in the airport that's shown in the trailer. There's a lot more to that scene. And it's really, really, really funny. The K-pop version of Wet Ass Pussy is just great. I will never hear that song the same ever again. And yeah, the second half of this movie takes this turn where you actually really care for these characters and you know what they're going through. You want them to solve their problems. It does follow that kind of formula of like they're going to have a falling out in like the bridge from the second to third act, and you know they're going to get resolved. But it's still really nice to get to know these characters, and especially Sherry Kohler, who I've never seen before. She was amazing. She's a standout in this movie. Stephanie Soo was also really, really good too. Yeah, the standout for me, I think, was Sherry Kohler. She was really, really funny. There's a lot of, what I like about this movie as well, it's like very sex positive, and it is like, people can look at this movie and say like, oh, there's just lots of pussy jokes here and there, here and there, here and there. But I'm just really happy to see that it's a full Asian cast. There are some, their parents, Audrey's parents are played by like David Denham and Meredith Hagner. But we are, these girls, like our main characters, they're all Asian. We go to Beijing. We go to other places throughout Asia as well. I don't want to spoil it, but we go to other places throughout Asia as well. And it's just really cool to see that in a mainstream studio comedy, and see them get to do all these things we saw in the in all these kind of you know, these white films that we've seen for fucking decades, and to get to see them do all that and give us their spin on that as well. I really liked the creativity behind certain scenes and how they were shown. Yeah, I really liked this. Again, not like the funniest movie ever, but I still think it's a really good time, and I recommend you go see it. Go support this movie so we can get more movies like this, especially with a cast as amazing as this, and I'm looking forward to see what Adele Lim does next. Okay. Now, let's get back on our road to reckoning. We covered the first Mission Impossible film and Mission Impossible 2 in the previous podcast. So today we're going to talk about Mission Impossible 3 and Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. Let's start with that third movie. Now, Mission Impossible 3, this time, is directed by J.J. Abrams. And he made the first two seasons of Alias. Tom Cruise really loved it. And he employed Mr. Abrams to take on the vision for Mission Impossible 3. And we do get, what we do get is a very J.J. Abrams movie, complete with shaky cam, lens flares, a lot of dark contrast, and a lot of just adrenaline and action. And the first thing I'll say about Mission Impossible 3 is this movie in this franchise, where it sits, it really is, it is an action film. When we think of Mission Impossible, we think of, you know, action, but also spy, espionage, that kind of stuff. And 3 is just balls to the wall action. It's brutal. It's visceral. There is so much shaky cam. My God. so much shaky cam. And it's just like, it's like taking a cocaine shot and then a fucking snorting speed and having a fucking cup of coffee, and then just like that, your heart is racing, and that's what this movie is. So Ethan in this movie is, he's off duty, he's retired, and he's now married to a woman named Julia, played by Michelle Monaghan. And when he gets a call from, when he's called back into action to save Agent Ferris, played by Kerry Russell, he comes face to face with a new threat, Owen Davian, played by the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. And this movie is, it's nasty, man. It's a fun movie, but it's like a nasty movie. there's Philip Seymour Hoffman's villain, Owen Davian. He's a very like cold-hearted, matter of the fact, just ruthless killer. The scene between he and Ethan, when he's just like, you have a family, you have a wife, daughter, I'm gonna go find him, and I'll go hold him. And it's just like, it's so chilling. But the thing that really gets me about the film, and especially with Owen Davian as a character, there really is no like dimensionality to him. There's no like layers to him at all. He really could be one of the most kind of forgettable villains in this franchise, and he really isn't. He is so memorable, and it's definitely because of Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance, because he just plays the role so well, and he's able to have a lot of fun with the role as well, especially when we go to the Vatican City heist, which is my favorite. I think probably my favorite part of the movie is the Vatican heist, tied with the Shanghai stuff, especially with Tom Cruise running. But yeah, that stuff in the Vatican where he takes over, where he tries to get a mask from Davian, and then Philip Seymour Hoffman has to play Tom Cruise that's playing Philip Seymour Hoffman, and there's a lot of like there's a lot of stuff going on there, and I really get a kick out of that scene, and it's great to see such a talent like take that on. It also has Lawrence Fishburne as the new secretary. When that line where he says, I will bleed to make sure the stripes stay red. Like, dude, cold and badass is a lot of what I associate to this movie. Very cold because it's very blue, like a J.J. Abrams film. A lot of lens flares, a lot of blue lens flares here and there. But yeah, it really is a cold film. I forgot. Also in this movie as well, that has Billy Crudup in it, is the one actually that recruits Ethan back into the field and helps him, with Ferris, and then eventually with the stuff with Davian, and then obviously double crosses him in the end. I totally forgot he was in it, and always love seeing Billy Crudup. I've always liked this movie, but it's always been one that has stayed kind of not in that top four or top five, you know what I mean? But that being said, I think I liked it a lot more this time around. I do still don't like the shaky cam. That's just not how I like my action films. I just don't like not knowing the geography of the scene and, you know, a lot of cutting and just not my cup of tea, that kind of action. I just like it all. I don't like the whole thing in camera, but I do like to see what is actually going on and actually get a grip on actually what I'm seeing. But what I do also like about it, that's the thing, it's like a double-edged sword. What I do like about it is that it allows it to be this, when it goes handheld, it allows it to be, it's this adrenaline pumped, and it makes it very visceral as well. The scene when Ferris, when that bomb like blows up in her head, that device blows up in her head that Davian detonates, and then you just see like, I think it was just like a head shake or a head like snap, and Carrie Russell's face just like goes blank, and then her eyes are like bloodshot or white. It's, oh man, like that scene always is like, oh fuck. The scene as well in the end when Ethan has to tell Julia that he has to die first, and then she has to defibrillate him. That all is just like crazy as well. It's very like I said, like it's not my type of favorite action, but it is really, really well done when it is. And it's so like gritty and brutal and dirty. And like, I can't help but respect that approach. As much as I don't prefer it, I can't help but respect that approach to this film and what Abrams was able to bring to it. And that brings us to my favorite shot of the movie, which is the long take run through Shanghai that Tom Cruise does, and that is like easily my favorite run in this entire franchise, when Ethan is like running across. I think he starts on a rooftop, he goes down certain levels, and then you just get this long unbroken take of Cruise running along this river through people, which is so impressive. Like, we'll talk about what's going on here in a second, but when he's just going through this man is a gun. He's a bullet. He's shooting through this crowd. All while on the phone to Simon Pegg, his first appearance, Benji Dunn, in the franchise, and trying to get him to tell him where the rabbit's foot is, or I think where Julia is. I'm not sure. I think it's where Julia is. And he's on the phone the whole entire time. He's got to like jump over walls, jump over people. A lot of movement while trying to be on the phone to someone. It's such a great fucking scene. Just go on YouTube and watch it for yourself. If you want to watch it just out of context, go on YouTube and watch it for yourself if you want to. But also just watch the movie. It's actually a good, good film. And yeah, like I said, I can't help but respect the approach of this one. It's much better than two, I'll say that. And what I really respect and impressed by that in that scene is the blocking has to be so hard. Like when Cruz is gunning down that river and gunning down the side of it and shooting through people and trying to get past them, like you got to think when that is being shot, first of all, that's got to be shot. I think it was shot on like a spider cam, which they used in Spider-Man 2, if I'm correct. They had that shooting down the river, and then Cruz is running along, Ethan Hunt running along. And Cruz has to get all of his movements right. He has to hit all his marks. These extras have to hit all their marks and make sure the blocking is correct. And then it has to go smoothly. And the fact that we see all of that happen in one shot, chef's kiss. I fucking love it. So yeah, I actually really enjoy 3. I don't think it's as good. I think when we get to the Macquarie stuff, I think that's a bit better. And like I said, this is not my type of action filmmaking. It's not my favorite. But to repeat myself for a third time, I can't help but respect that approach. And I love that Abrams was able to bring that kind of flavor to this movie. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, man, as Owen Davian, is still easily the best villain in the franchise. I think his runner-up will probably be the Syndicate with Solomon Lane. But I think he's still, to me, I think it's just because it's Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's able to bring that gravitas to that role. And yeah, absolutely, absolutely love it. And that brings us to the end of Mission Impossible 3. Again, not up there with my favorites, but it's really not a bad movie either. It's not even close to a bad movie either. So that's that. So moving on to Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. This movie was released in, I forgot to say that Mission Impossible 3 was released in 2006. And this movie is released in 2011. This time, this film is directed by Brad Bird, who had only before this made The Iron Giant and The Incredibles movie. And Tom Cruise employed Brad Bird to bring his new vision to the franchise. And this time, the script is being worked on by Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec. But rewrites were being done by Christopher McQuarrie, who we know that would take on the franchise from here on out with Rogue Nation, Fallout, and now Dead Reckoning Part 1 and Part 2. So this is where I think the McQuarrie era is rearing its head. It's kind of poking it in there. You can tell with a lot of scenes that it's kind of poking in there, but we're still getting Brad Bird's his vision and his fucking just excellent, excellent action film. That being said, there are some things I do not like about it. I think when we have that, I like the prison escape in the beginning with Ethan and Bogdan. I like all that. The start with Josh Holloway and Jane and Benji, like that's all interesting. But then when they pick up Ethan, there's like this tension that's there between Ethan and Jane that I just don't think needs to be there. Like, we now see that Benji has passed all the tests and is out in the field. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, how the fuck is he out in the field? Like, he really isn't that competent yet. But he is out in the field and he has a new team. And I just thought that was a weird way of giving some tension between Ethan and the new team, like, oh, this is my new team now. Like, okay, shit. And then that's the same with, like, Brandt as well and his backstory with Julia. And I just think it's not all rock solid. And doesn't really, if you really look at that closely, it can just I don't know, it kind of can like irk at you a little bit. I just didn't really like that kind of that. It just felt like fake tension. That's what it felt like, fake tension, because he's immediately like hostile towards her, like, oh fuck, who are you? Like, are you? This is my team. Like, who are you? Just felt weird. I think there's just some things where if you look at it too closely, this movie can kind of fall apart. But also, if you don't, you can just enjoy this movie. Like I said in my latest review for it on Letterboxd, you can just watch it over and over again. Like the stuff with the Kremlin, I love that heist with the Kremlin. I love the Dubai sequence. But unfortunately, after the Dubai sequence, I think the second half of Ghost Protocol is not as good as its first half, because it's just not as exciting. And that brings me to another like screenwriting issue, is that you have this amazing sequence that the movie is built around. This is, I think, one of the first times a lot of attention was being given to, this is the big action set piece that Tom Cruise is going to do in this movie. And everything is built and structured around this. It feels like, anyway, to me, that this everything is built and structured around this central action set piece that with the Burj Khalifa. And I just think afterwards, there really is not much steam left in the film. I still like the car, the stuff with the cars is interesting, but it's just not as fun. The party beforehand actually gets kind of pretty boring at times. And it just loses the energy. And I think if you structure everything around a huge action set piece in the middle, I think your end either has to be bigger or be more character driven or being given more emotional stakes, because the third act of this movie, like I said, is easily the weakest part of the film. And it kind of just ends. And then, I do like the stuff with Julia at the end, how we find out she's still alive. That's all good. And then we also get fucking Luther. Luther's back in the club. Luther's back, which I love. He is really sorely missed in these movies as well, Luther. He's really sorely missed. And I love when Ving Rhames, comes back at the end. But yeah, I think that's a lesson that you could take away from this, is this, like, don't structure your film just around this huge thing that, you know, your star is going to do. Like, there needs to be something at the end that people can, you know, come away from and really believe in these emotional stakes. And I just don't, they kind of just end, they kill the agents, they kill the villain. Tom Cruise says mission accomplished, which is fucking badass, by the way. It's still badass. And then it's just over. And then the movie is over. Tom Cruise disappears into the mist as a ghost. I get it. I see you. Brad Bird, I see you. But and then it's kind of just over. But I don't know, man. There's something about... It's so weird, because this used to be like my favorite one. And now Fallout is definitely my favorite one now. But like, this used to be one of my big favorites. But I actually now prefer Rogue Nation to this one. And we'll talk about Rogue Nation on the next podcast, but I'd actually do prefer Rogue Nation to this one, even though, again, I love the beginning, I love the Kremlin sequence, the Dubai sequence is thrilling as well, but it's just the end. It's easily the weakest kind of third act of this whole entire franchise, and that's just how I feel about it. But I do like how with 3, you get this, you know, crazy action film, but with 4... we're back to the action espionage, Mac with the equipment. And speaking of the equipment as well, I actually do like that as well. That's in the script, how all of the equipment is malfunctioning. It kind of is this like representation of the team as well, because they're not functioning. And I know that, like I said, that fake tension between Ethan and Jane feels weird, because it does feel weird. But then I do also like how the equipment is a kind of representation of that team trying to work together. And he even says that. Ethan says at the end, he says, you know, throughout this whole mission, our equipment was malfunctioning and wouldn't work, but the only thing that did work was this team. And, that's what I love about these films as well, is all the different teams. I do love the team that we have now currently. That's team number one. but all the different teams, all the different secretaries we go through, it's just, it makes the franchise so much more interesting and more timeless in a way. How, you know, no one's getting old. It's all different people every time. And, you know, I know we have our current team, and we have Ilsa Faust, which we're talking about her in the next podcast, because goddamn, I've got some thoughts about Ilsa. But I just love how it's able to, I just love how it has all that. And I love the praise of teamwork, because yeah, they wouldn't get the jobs done without these teams, or this team in particular, this movie. So yeah, there's a lot of conflicting thoughts. I know I sound like I'm like backflipping and going back and forth, but like, there's just a lot of conflicting thoughts in this movie. There's some things I like, there's some things I don't like. But I still would give this like a 4 out of 5, and say this is like a solid, solid film, because it still is, at the end of the day, like a really exciting action movie. And I feel like if you didn't know the franchise, you could just insert yourself here and watch this movie and just watch it on its own as a really good action spy movie. Yeah. So that's what I got to say about Ghost Protocol. Just some more mixed feelings, but I still really, really like it. And that brings us to the end of this podcast for The Road to Reckoning. That was Mission Impossible 3, directed by J.J. Abrams, and that was Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, directed by Brad Bird. Next time, we'll be looking at Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which is then carried on by Christopher McQuarrie, also fully written by Christopher McQuarrie as well. And we'll be looking at my favorite of the franchise, Mission Impossible Fallout, also directed by and written by Christopher McQuarrie. But that'll do it for me, guys. Stay safe, and I'll see you in the next Crossroads on our Road to Reckoning.